It's Tuesday, September 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Coming up this half hour, the United States denies it's in a state of war with North Korea. President Trump expands the travel ban to the U.S. Will this one outlast a court challenge? And celebrating books that some people want to ban.
It's an American right to be able to express yourself in however you see fit. And it's also an American right to avoid things by choice that you don't agree with. And books are something that are very easily avoided.
It's all ahead this half hour on International Edition. The United States has dismissed North Korea's accusation that President Donald Trump, in tweeted remarks last week, declared war on North Korea. The charge was made in New York Monday by North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho. Mr. Trump Saturday predicted the North Korean leadership would not be around much longer. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked to respond to Ri's remarks.
We've not declared war on North Korea, and frankly, the suggestion of that is absurd. It's never appropriate for a country to shoot down another country's aircraft when it's over international waters. Our goal is still the same. We continue to seek the peaceful denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. That's our focus, doing that through both the most maximum economic and diplomatic pressures as possible at this point.
The North Korean diplomat also warned that Pyongyang now has the right to engage in countermeasures. That includes shooting down U.S. airplanes, even if they're not operating in North Korean airspace. Sung-yoon Lee, a Tufts University Korean Studies assistant professor, told VOA's Victor Beatty his remarks achieved several objectives.
When you look at the turmoil and the uncertainty in other parts of Europe, to have such a consistent and stable leadership of the nation through four separate electoral periods is a remarkable thing. But yes, there's certainly widespread concern about the rise of the far right and just how her new coalition will look.
The Alternative for Germany, AfD as it's called, won 13% of the vote, including nearly 23% in eastern Germany, which is Angela Merkel's home base. A significant increase of some 87 seats.
Yes, and perhaps even more than that, I think. It's not a surprise that the base is in East Germany, because in the 20-odd years since reunification, East Germany has clearly struggled still in the transition, much as other Central and East European nations have.
The publisher-editor of the German weekly Die Zeit said the vote marked a tectonic shift in German politics. The three-way coalition Ms. Merkel looks likely to try to forge will be, quote, highly unstable.
That's VOA's Victor Beatty. Well, South Korea's Yonhap news agency on Tuesday, quoting South Korean intelligence, said the North has moved warplanes and strengthened coastal defenses in the east following Saturday's latest U.S. show of force. That included B-1B bombers and a fighter escort in a nighttime reconnaissance mission in international airspace north of the northern limit line. That's the de facto inter-Korean sea border. RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett speculated if the North was prepared to shoot down U.S. aircraft.
Those aircraft are highly superior to anything North Korea has in their inventory. So if North Korea tried to send a dozen aircraft up to take down the B-1 bomber, North Korea could lose a dozen aircraft and do basically little damage. If they tried to overwhelm the four F-15s or however many aircraft are involved in escorting with, say, 50 or so fighter aircraft, by the time they got all those aircraft up in the air and headed out towards the B-1, the F-15s and other surveillance means would be noting that that was what was happening. And the B-1 and the F-15s could simply move towards Japan, where they could get support from the Japanese Air Force, the American Air Force in Misawa, and from the U.S. carrier aircraft in the Sea of Japan.
RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett speaking there. China's foreign ministry on Tuesday said there would be no winners in a Korean conflict and once again called for peace talks. Meanwhile, in India, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said the United States still wants a diplomatic solution. Well, joining us here now in our studio is Andrew Palcheski, VOA social media editor. Andrew, I wonder if today is as busy in social media as it seems to be in terms of news that's happening out there.
It is indeed. You have one sometimes these days where just everything's going on at once,
yes.
And today is certainly one of those days. One story that's been trending consistently really since last week, and we've seen it especially in the past couple days really capture the attention of the country, is this kneeling controversy in the National Football League.
You know, this is fascinating. I can't remember a time, I'm sure there have been times, when a topic that might have been sort of obscure, this has been with us for a good year, all of a sudden just seems to have exploded into something that people can't stop talking about.
Yeah, and it's really something that has gone from the sports world into the top news headlines. It has transcended even the National Football League. You have sports stars coming out across different, you know, basketball, baseball, even NASCAR, speaking out for or against these protests. And then you have, of course, President Trump, who was kind of the impetus for this, the person who kicked off the debate over this with those series of tweets, still tweeting out about this, saying the NFL has all sorts of rules and regulations. The only way out for them is to set a rule that you can't kneel during the national anthem. And that is really where the focus has shifted now, is where is the out point for the National Football League? This controversy has been going on for a year. Mm-hmm. It has all of a sudden become the forefront of our national attention. Does it continue to stay there? Does it fizzle out? And so a lot of fans are wondering where this goes from here. Now, on the side of the people who are unhappy about these protests, I saw something on Facebook earlier today that they're starting to organize a boycott of the National Football League. Some people saying they're going to boycott the entire season. Other people say they're going to boycott on November 12th because that is the Sunday after Veterans Day here in the U.S. So they said Veterans Weekend is the time they're not going to watch any games. They're going to make their voices heard by not tuning in to see the National Football League. Then you have people who are in support of these protests who are disappointed that the tenor of this debate, they're saying that the issue, that the really the issue at the crux of these protests, which is the treatment of minorities in the United States, the reason why quarterback Colin Kaepernick started this protest over a year ago, that's kind of gone by the wayside. People are focused on patriotism and unity. They're not focusing on what this protest is really supposed to be about.
I know time is limited and you may have another topic or two, but very quickly, how much also are you hearing people just expressing perhaps a sense of befuddlement that, you know, are we really having this conversation when Puerto Rico or the island of Puerto Rico looks like it's, you know, tipping into the Caribbean where, you know, there seems to be war words bandied about with North Korea, so many other things going on.
There's a lot of disappointment about that. There's a lot of question as to why we're talking about this and not those issues. Some people think it's a strategic move on President Trump's part that we're not talking about Russia. We're talking about the National Football League. And there's a lot of disappointment, too, that politics has worked its way into something that has been really an escape for people. You know, people turn on the TV on Sunday to watch football, not to hear a political debate. They just want to check out, watch, you know, these guys beat up on each other on the field.
Right.
They didn't anticipate that this was going to be a political arena as opposed to a sporting arena. So I think there's a lot of disappointment about that from both sides. People don't want to see politics interjected in something that has really been a national pastime and something of recreation.
Briefly, anything else bubbling up out there?
Oh, there always is, but we'll have to save it for tomorrow because I know our time is brief. But more to follow on this story as well. I'm sure it's only going to grow over the next days, weeks, and possibly even months.
Andrew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
VOA's social media editor, Andrew Palcheski. Here are some of the top stories trending at this hour. Questions mount about a sluggish U.S. emergency response in Puerto Rico. Equifax CEO Richard Smith suddenly resigns in the wake of a massive hacking attack. Russia once again threatens to ban Facebook from the country. The U.S. and India work to shore up a recent defense agreement. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com, our website, and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. Researchers at the French National Center for Scientific Research have determined that ultra-high energy cosmic rays that bombard the Earth do not originate from our own galaxy, but from others tens or even hundreds of millions of light years away. Cosmic rays are described as high-energy radiation that consists of high-speed protons and nuclei. Ultra-high-energy cosmic ray particles are said to have kinetic energy that can be more than 1 quintillion electron volts. That's a 1 followed by 18 zeros. The researchers made their findings after studying data gathered since 2004 by the Pierre Auger Observatory in Argentina. While cosmic radiation can be quite hazardous to humans in space, thanks to the magnetic field and atmosphere, those of us on Earth are pretty much protected from most cosmic rays. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Live from Washington, you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Doug Bernard. The U.S. Supreme Court has taken President Donald Trump's travel ban off its October docket. This after the president issued new travel rules on Sunday, timed when part of the original travel ban was expiring. The rules expand the list of countries affected. And this time, the restrictions do not expire, but may last indefinitely. VOA's Molly McKittrick has more on the story.
As widely expected, the new travel restrictions target perceived individual threats by individual country. Specifically, the new rules suspend entry into the U.S. of immigrants and non-immigrants from Chad, Libya, and Yemen on business, tourist, or business tourist visas. Block entry of Iranian citizens, but provide an exception for Iranian students with additional screening. Bar immigrants and visitors from North Korea and Syria. Prevent immigration by citizens of Somalia and subject Somalian visitors to enhanced screening. Remove Sudan from the list. At an immigration law conference at Georgetown University Monday, the travel ban was a hot topic of conversation. While President Donald Trump's proclamation said he must act to protect the security of the United States, some questioned his motives.
There are real threats in the world, and there are individuals that we have to keep a watch on. But the problem here is that sometimes measures like these happen in a larger context of nativism and xenophobia. And when that happens, it's sometimes hard to distinguish whether this has real national security drivers or there are other considerations at play too.
Trump said the new restrictions will remain in effect until the countries in question improve their security screening.
The way that the travel order has been placed is that countries have to meet a minimum baseline requirement and also be part of sharing information. Over this last period of time, they've stepped up and met those baseline requirements that the United States has laid out.
The rules are subject to periodic government review and may face court challenges, if not at the Supreme Court level. The Supreme Court had been prepared to hear arguments about the legality of Trump's executive order, but the revised version may call for a new case starting in the lower courts.
Well, what is going to happen in the Supreme Court now that the travel ban has changed? I think if you stick around and listen today, you're going to hear opinions going all different directions. It's a complex issue because of the changes in the travel ban, because of the parties involved are not going to want it to go away necessarily, but it's a new ban and it's going to have to be looked at on its own.
Meanwhile, the expiring part of the old travel ban has been reinstated, and the new expanded travel rules take effect October 18th. Molly McKitterick, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, librarians and scholars in the United States challenge censorship during banned books weeks. First, to the story that just won't go away. In fact, far from it, it seems to be exploding into a full-fledged national conversation. We're talking about the National Football League and the national anthem. It all began last week when President Donald Trump may have kicked a sleeping tiger. He criticized professional athletes who refused to stand during the playing of the national anthem. At a rally last Friday, Mr. Trump called the kneel-in protest unpatriotic, but used much harsher words. While the tiger kicked back on Sunday, as hundreds of National Football League players joined the protest in a massive display of defiance, VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports the president's inflammatory rhetoric has touched a raw nerve in the national debate over patriotism and racial injustice.
In the face of take-a-knee protests involving most National Football League teams Sunday, President Trump defended his criticism of athletes who refused to stand for pregame flag ceremonies.
We have great people representing our country, especially our soldiers, our first responders, and they should be treated with respect. And when you get on your knee and you don't respect the American flag or the anthem, that's not being treated with respect.
In a series of Twitter posts, Trump praised football fans who booed players who knelt at Sunday's game and urged them to boycott games until the protests stop. Former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick started the movement last season when he knelt during the national anthem as a protest against racial injustice. Only a few players had joined the take-a-knee protests until Friday, when Trump told supporters in the southern state of Alabama that players who refused to respect the flag should be fired.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
The comments infuriated players throughout the league, particularly African Americans, who saw them as racially motivated.
And any time we feel like one of our brothers, whether it's on this team or another team, is in some form or fashion attacked, we are going to bind together.
By Monday, some of America's best-known athletes were chiming in.
It's not about the disrespect of the flag and our military and everybody that has made this world free. It is about equality and people having the option and the freedom to speak upon things that they feel that's not unjust.
Under fire, Trump and his press secretary attempted to fend off the firestorm.
This has nothing to do with race. I've never said anything about race.
Look, this isn't about the president being against anyone, but this is about the president and millions of Americans being for something, being for honoring our flag, honoring our national anthem, and honoring the men and women who fought to defend it.
Sports management expert Daniel Kelly of Georgetown University, in a Skype interview with VOA, said while many African Americans see Trump's comments as racially insensitive, he may have inadvertently helped the cause of equality by giving the protests a higher profile.
Every victory, every athlete that kneels, every athlete that, or owner that comes down and locks arms, this is going to be something that's going to continue. It's going to be a long, hard process until we actually see some results. And so this is the beginning.
Whatever the outcome, Trump's comments have moved the small protest started by one player a year ago to a nationally televised drama that promises to envelop all of American professional sports. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, The White House.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
You're listening to International Edition, coming to you from the Voice of America. This is Banned Books Week in the United States. That's an annual event that points out that censorship and emphasizes the freedom to read. In Washington, D.C., the public library system has hidden around the city hundreds of copies of 6 books that may be banned or challenged in some libraries and schools in the United States. People who find these books can take them home for free. VOA's Deborah Block brings us to a bookstore where customers were searching for the books they want to read.
Here at the Duende District Bookstore in Washington, customer Katie Schwartz is on a mission to complete her collection of the 6 free banned books.
They are wrapped in black paper.
Oh my goodness.
And hidden among other books for sale.
Yes. This is the one. This is the last one. Yay. I need. Thank you. I had four of the books when I came in, which means I only needed two more. And the very, very first one that I opened was one that I haven't seen anywhere else.
Since notebooks are banned in Washington, Schwartz finds it hard to believe it is happening in the United States at all.
It's an American right to be able to express yourself in however you see fit, and it's also an American right to avoid things by choice that you don't agree with. And books are something that are very easily avoided if you don't agree with them.
Customer Lyric Prince comes across Fahrenheit 451, a science fiction novel where books are outlawed in American society, and any found are burned by firemen. Some people object to the profanity or burning of a Bible in the story. Prince is not surprised that some books, like this novel published more than 60 years ago, are still banned today.
A lot of places in this country don't exactly take kindly to progressive ideas.
At this public library in Washington, Linnea Hegarty, head of the D.C. Public Library Foundation, says those ideas may include political issues or sexual orientation.
Families with two dads or two moms, for example. Also, sometimes books about war are often banned, particularly if they talk about some of the political issues that are causing war.
Among the groups sponsoring Banned Books Week is the American Library Association, which puts out an annual list of the 10 most challenged books, a formal attempt to remove material from a library or school curriculum. Julius Jefferson Jr. is with the group's Intellectual Freedom Committee.
Some of the themes could be dealing with LGBT issues, certainly issues dealing with race, certainly issues dealing with religion. The majority of the books that are being banned you see coming from parents that want to ban books. They feel that these books are not appropriate for their children.
He says the American Library Association is aware of about 250 challenges last year. And the good news is that very few books ever actually get banned. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
And that does it for this edition of International Edition. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. We hope you'll be with us again tomorrow. And in the meantime, you can visit us on our website, voanews.com.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump addressed a group of African leaders during his trip to New York. He told them, "We hope to extend our economic partnerships with countries that are committed to self-reliance and to fostering opportunities for job creation in both Africa and the United States. Africa has tremendous business potential and represents a vast array of markets. Indeed, 10 of the world's fastest-growing economies are in Africa." President Trump noted that increasing American trade and investment across diverse industries, including agriculture, energy, transportation, health care, travel, and tourism, will further transform lives throughout the continent. The U.S. Millennium Challenge Corporation, administered by the State Department, is already considering an investment worth hundreds of millions of dollars in Côte d'Ivoire, which has made impressive economic reforms. We also hope that African firms, like the company Sasol, will consider making investments in the United States, said President Trump. Sasol is building a $9 billion petrochemical plant in Louisiana, which will create many new jobs in the state. The U.S. will continue its partnership with African nations on critical health initiatives as well. With regard to addressing conflict in Africa, the United States is committed to partnering with countries and organizations like the African Union to end violence, counter terrorism, and respond to humanitarian crises. Terrorist groups such as ISIS, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, and Al-Qaeda continue to threaten too many African countries. The United States is proud to work with these nations to eradicate terrorist safe havens, to cut off their finances, and to discredit their depraved ideology, said President Trump. The U.S. is monitoring the ongoing violence in South Sudan and the DRC, where millions of lives are at risk. Real results in halting this catastrophe, said President Trump, will require an African-led peace process. Toward that end, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley will be traveling to the continent to discuss avenues of conflict resolution and prevention. The United States, said President Trump, believes that free, independent, democratic nations are the best vehicle for human happiness and success, including in Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.